from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
A powerful conversion story reached a very important step this Easter with the entry of Tammy Peterson, wife of famed author and psychologist Jordan Peterson, into the Catholic Church. This week on Register Radio, we talked to EWTN correspondent Colm Flynn, who interviewed her just before the Easter Vigil. And then we are joined by Register Senior Editor Jonathan Liedl to unpack Dignitatis Infinita, the Vatican's new statement on human dignity. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Executive Director of the National Catholic Register and Catholic News Agency, your host here on Register Radio. I'm joined by my co-host Matthew Bunsen, who is EWTN News' Vice President and Editorial Director. Jordan Peterson, the renowned and often controversial psychologist, is outspoken on many issues. But one fact that towers above his many achievements and his notoriety is his love for his wife of 38 years, Tammy, and his support for her during her recent fight against cancer and her conversion to Catholicism. Tammy Peterson entered the church this Easter. EWTN News correspondent Colm Flynn interviewed Tammy and Jordan about faith and what the journey has meant to both of them. He joins us now. So Colm, thank you for joining us here from Rome to talk about this important story. You got back from Canada not too long ago after having been there for the Easter Vigil to watch and pray with Tammy Peterson as she joined the Catholic faith. What a beautiful moment that you chronicled for us.
Hey, Jeanette and Matthew, great to talk to you guys. And you know what? It was such an incredible, the Easter Vigil was beautiful anyway, but then to have that added element of Tammy being confirmed and brought into the church and all eyes being on that and just the beauty of that moment, it was really magical and beautiful to be there for the moment.
Yes, and it wasn't the first time. You talked to her a day before, I think, or 2 days before. No, it was a day before the vigil. And you spoke with her about her experience. And she had just total calm and total peace. I was very struck by her total peace. How did she get to this moment?
Well, the story is long and winding, of course, with ups and downs. But really, it started 5 years ago when, a lot of people, most people, I think, who are listening might be aware of her husband, Jordan Peterson, one of the most famous psychologists, clinical psychologists in the world from Canada. And he exploded years ago. And so his wife, Tammy, was always in the background, in the shadows. She would travel the world with him to different talks and different events. But he was the public figure. He was the face. And nobody really knew who Tammy Peterson was. 5 years ago, the entire family's life was turned upside down when she was brought in, like so many people around the world, and she was told the awful news that she had cancer. But she was diagnosed with this very rare type of kidney cancer, and they were told, look, we're not even going to try and treat this. There are different things that you could attempt, but the statistics show us in the data that this has a 0% survival rate. And they gave her 10 months to live in Toronto's hospital. And, these are people of means. They're multimillionaires. They were able to go to some of the best hospitals in North America, as Jordan Peterson told me. And they were told again and again the same diagnosis, that she had around 10, maybe 11 months to live. She was in hospital. She was despairing. Her family was despairing. And then this lady, who she kind of half knew, not that well, offered to come visit her in hospital. A lady called Queenie Yu. So Queenie went to her in hospital and brought her a gift of a pair of rosary beads. And she said, oh, I know what these are, but I don't know how to pray the rosary. And that led Queenie to teaching her about the different mysteries. And she would sit with her day after day. Then, long story short, as Tammy told me in this incredible interview, she started to pray and she came to terms with the fact that she was going to die. She accepted it. Then the pain that she was going through, she started to not feel the pain because she was concentrating on praying the rosary. And then she did go for some surgery. They removed some of the cancer, not all of it. And then there was other complications. But then she went back for a checkup one day and the doctors kind of came in. And as Tammy said, they were wide-eyed and they said, we've checked everything and you're clear.
It's amazing.
You can go home. And she said, I can go home now. Today they said, yes, come back for another check. She went back and they said, it's gone. So she was given 10 months to live. 5 years later, here she is living a healthy life. And she puts it down to the power of the rosary. And then that, of course, incredible experience led her on this journey then to finding out more about the Catholic faith, to investigating it, and ultimately converting to it with Queenie, who brought her those rosary beads as her sponsor. So it was beautiful as a visual because Queenie was on one side of her, and then Jordan Peterson, her husband, was on the other side of her, right at the very front of the church, the Holy Rosary Church in Toronto.
And I want to talk about Jordan Peterson. I mean, you interviewed him twice, basically, and both times, fascinating interviews. He obviously has this incredible love for his wife. He tears up in a couple of times in these interviews. What did he have to say about his wife's conversion?
Yeah, Jeanette, I think he was just tearing up because he was thinking, what am I doing sitting across from this guy? who allowed this guy in to interview me? But you're right. Jordan Peterson is renowned, as you said in your intro, for being controversial, for being very sharp, focused in his interviews. He goes very deep, very quickly, and he's not afraid to hold back. So as an interviewer, he's a very intimidating interviewee. But I went into it and said, look, really, this is about his wife. And we're talking about Tammy and the amazing story that that has been unfolding in front of his eyes, but in front of all of our eyes. And so I just went in and said, look, what do you think? He's a clinical psychologist. So he comes from a background of data and of science and of research. And, you know, I said to him, I put it to him that his wife, Tammy, believed that she had been cured by a miracle, that what had happened to her was truly miraculous. Does he think the same? He didn't say yes, but he didn't say no. But he pointed out the data and he said, we were told there was no chance, no hope. Something incredible has happened here. And his own wrestling with faith, you know, he's given talks on the Old Testament that have sold out to tens of thousands of mainly young men. He's done many interviews with Bishop Barron, him interviewing Bishop Barron, Bishop Barron interviewing him. He's come to Rome here to visit the Vatican with Bishop Barron. So he has this insatiable appetite to learn more about the Catholic faith and Christianity. And so just watching that unfold in real time in front of me, when you're interviewing Jordan Peterson, you don't have to do a lot of asking questions. You give him a few good questions and he just kind of runs with it. So particularly in the last interview we did, we did the interview an hour before the Easter vigil on the Saturday night. So he had come into the church, the candles were lit. They came a bit early. Tammy had come much earlier that day to kind of rehearse and go through the mechanics of the Mass and when she would have to come up. And Jordan was there earlier that day. So the incense, you could smell it. The priests were going around getting ready. So he was kind of in this zone, in this place. So when I sat down with him in the parish house, you could tell that he was much more contemplative. I asked him about his view on the Christian message. They went through the Easter message themselves. I mean, going from being on the cross to new life. She was condemned to death by the doctors, was told there was no hope. She has new life now, and new life in the sense that she has this faith. But you're right, the most beautiful moment from the interview was when I asked him towards the end, look, what has this done for you and Tammy, for your marriage and for your unity? And that's when he paused and he started to cry and he said, I love my wife. I fell in love with my wife the moment I saw her when she was a kid. And her new faith has brought her back to that childlike state. And the childlike state in that kind of glowing, just sheer beauty and sheer goodness that a child has. And only today, someone here in Rome stopped me and said, in that interview, when he said that it made her like a child again, that's it. He hit the nail on the head. That's what it's like to have that faith and to realize that it's true, to be given the gift of faith. So that was a beautiful, beautiful moment.
That was precisely the moment in my mind, Colm, that I was going to bring up as a close, because that's what it's all about. I mean, it's coming home. And being who you truly are. That's what being washed clean and in baptism and confirmation and communion and confession is all about. So what a beautiful interview. And I think one last little question. We are really out of time. What hope do we have for Jordan Peterson coming into the church? What did he have to say about that?
I'm going to pass this one over to Dr. Matthew Bunsen, please.
Matthew, you saw.
Well, Matthew, what do you think after seeing the interview?
I think that Jordan Peterson is on his way, but as is his wont, he will do it on his terms and in his time.
I think Matthew hit the nail on the head.
Exactly. Well said. And we can pray for both of these, Tammy and her conversion and Jordan Peterson on his journey. When we come back, we'll talk to Register Senior Editor Jonathan Liddle about the Vatican's newest document, reaffirming church teaching on human dignity. This is Register Radio on EWTN. Stay tuned for more.
The Easter season is 7 weeks, and whether you have traditions to help you live this season to the fullest, or if you're seeking new ones, EWTN's award-winning National Catholic Register is here for you. Inform your mind and inspire your heart so you can better live out your faith each day. Save half off your subscription today. Get the National Catholic Register delivered to your home, office, or parish. Gain a deeper understanding of God's love and providence by reading the Register. To get 50% off your subscription, order online at ncregister.com/radio or call 800-421-3230 and mention code radio. The National Catholic Register. Read faithfully. Call or click today to save half off.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Executive Director of the National Catholic Register and Catholic News Agency, and your host here on Register Radio. I'm joined by my co-host, Matthew Bunsen, who is EWTN News' Vice President and Editorial Director. So we're talking about a document today that came out on April 8th. It was issued from the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith, and it was a new declaration on human dignity, dignitatis infinita. Infinite dignity is what that Latin is. And so the statement, it's apparently 5 years in the making, and it's shaped by Pope Francis and the prefect for the Dicastery, which is, Cardinal Victor Manuel Fernandez. It's a lot of hot-button issues that this document touches, all in one place, and it's quite fascinating read. And to assess this document, we are joined by Senior Editor Jonathan Liddle. Hi, Jonathan. Welcome back.
Hey, Jeanette. Matthew, great to be with both of you.
So this has really kind of been a long-awaited document. There have been some hints that it was coming. And strangely, there were some hints that we would like it. I guess when I say we, there's a reference by Cardinal Fernandez that conservative media or conservative Catholics might like this document. So first of all, what do we know about what prompted this document? How did it come to be?
Yeah, well, great question, Jeanette. I mean, we do know, as you said, that this document has been a long time in the making. And Cardinal Fernandez gets into that in the introduction of Dignitas Infinita, that actually has been 5+ years that the Vatican was interested in addressing, especially bioethical questions related to human dignity and issues such as surrogacy, such as gender theory. But, you know, sometimes it takes... there's a bit of sausage making involved to get to the final product. 5 years is definitely a long time. But, you know, it went through a number of different iterations, different reviews by members and consultants of the Dicastery of the Doctrine of the Faith. And then when Cardinal Fernandez presented it to Pope Francis in November of 2023, he says that Pope Francis said this is good, right? But let's expand it even more and integrate this concept of human dignity, not just with these important bioethical questions, but also... you know, with questions related to poverty, to war, and really kind of the entirety of Catholic social teaching. So that's kind of how it came about. And it's, you know, as you said, it's a new declaration. So it's a new document, but in many ways, it's a re-articulation of what the Church has always taught, and then applying it in real concrete ways to some of the most pressing, controversial, and thorny issues out there right now.
Yeah, and I guess on that area of thorniness and kind of what I was alluding to in my little introduction, I think the you probably would remember the direct quote, but Cardinal Fernandez said something like, those who disapproved or criticized fiducia supplicans are going to like what's coming next, or something of that kind.
Exactly, yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I mean, yeah, so obviously I think it's really interesting juxtaposing this declaration of the dicastery of the doctrine of the faith from the one that came out 4.5 months ago, which is fiducia supplicans, the declaration that kind of gives the green light for blessing, non-liturgical blessings of same-sex couples. And we're still feeling the repercussions of that, right? We're still feeling the fallout from fiducia supplicans. And it's harder to think of a more sort of controversial church document in recent memory. And then this document comes out, and by and large, I mean, they're definitely detractors, I think, on sort of the progressive peripheries of the church, and also maybe more traditionalist peripheries. But by and large, it's been a document that's been very well received and embraced. Some people have even speculated that the Vatican was eager to publish this document, Dignitas Infinita, precisely because it would kind of quell the storm over fiducia supplicans. But we do know that Cardinal Fernandez presented it to Pope Francis in November, like we said. So it was, you know, nearing the finish line anyway. And yeah, I mean, as you said, he made the comment in the wake of some of the fiducia supplicans controversy that, okay, just wait till we have this document coming out in a bit. You'll like it a lot better. And yeah, so far, I think that's been the case. So it's kind of, I think for many people, a very welcome sort of change of pace to have a document come out from the Vatican that isn't sort of breaking new ground and causing confusion in some ways, but really one that's re-articulating what's been taught and really building. Another unique feature about this document, I would say, is that compared to fiducia supplicans and compared to a number of documents that have been produced during Francis's pontificate, this document really makes an effort to ground itself not just in sacred scripture and not just in Pope Francis's previous teachings, but also in the papal magisterium of recent popes. So heavily relying upon John Paul II, for instance. So really kind of underscoring that continuity with what the church has always taught.
And a lot of its grounding for presentation of human dignity does strike very Thomistic tones, doesn't it?
Yeah, and there's been some controversy over this, I guess, depending on which interpretation of Thomas you have. But, you know, the rooting this idea of infinite human dignity has caused some controversy because some people want to interpret it and say, oh, does this mean man has infinite dignity in the same way that God's infinite? Are we equating man to God? And I think it's really the document is, you know, when it unpacks what that means, it talks about infinite as integral, right? So this is something that it's not finite. It can't be lost. It's a constitutive part of who we are as human persons, made in the image and likeness of God, and then redeemed through the incarnation, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ, God made man. So I think that's caused a bit of controversy, but I think you can certainly read that understanding of infinite dignity in a way consistent with the tradition and consistent with Thomas Aquinas. I know, Matthew, you were talking to Father Petrie, Thomas Petrie yesterday, so maybe you've got some more insights on that front.
Well, yeah, it's very interesting that this document looks at types of human dignity. And in this case, can we see in these the direct influence of Pope Francis? Because he has certainly spoken quite often, including last October, about the need for the church to deepen her understanding of human dignity. So when this thing has four different types of dignity, what are we talking about here?
Yeah, well, the first one, ontological dignity, right? So ontological is kind of on the order of being. This is that dignity that we just have by virtue of who we are made by God, right? And this is what the document underscores, is ineliminable, right? It's inalienable. We can't lose this dignity, no matter the circumstances, right? No matter what we've done or what's going on in life around us, there's this bedrock of dignity that's really then the basis of our concepts of justice, of our concepts of charity, of everything else that flows from that in the church's moral teaching. But you're right, Matthew, really important distinctions here. We have that concept of ontological dignity distinguished with, for instance, moral dignity. So this is what we can say, the status we have by living consistent with this nature that God's given us, right? And we have freedom. We have freedom, and that's a big part of dignity too. And our moral dignity can, in a sense, be diminished – by not living consistent, right, with the gift of our nature that God has given us. So, you know, it's interesting. We think about, I was kind of thinking about Aristotle, because Aristotle really says that philosophy kind of begins by looking at how people use language. And we know that we sometimes say things like, oh, you know, I have an inalienable dignity. But then we also use dignity in some settings to say stuff like, you know, he lost his dignity, right? And I think the document is kind of getting at that. It's helping us think of how, in one sense, we have a dignity that can never be taken away. But then, you know, morally, we can make decisions inconsistent with that dignity. It also talks about social dignity, right? So what are the social circumstances and settings that I'm living in, and are they consistent with my God-given dignity, right? We think of someone living in squalor or poverty or persecuted for their faith, and we could say that their social dignity has been diminished. And then it also talks about existential dignity, which I'm sure a lot of the philosophers will be very intrigued by. But like, is my experience of life, right, my existence, my sense of joy and purpose, is that consistent with my dignity as well? And that might seem like a kind of esoteric quality, but think of all the unhappiness, right, in the West right now, in with so much wealth, but such a lack of purpose. You know, the document interestingly brings up as one of its concrete categories for application, digital violence, right? So it talks about pornography. It talks about, I don't know directly, but gaming and just the digital environment that's being created. And we got to ask a question, is that consistent with our human dignity? Does that diminish our existential dignity? So a lot, yeah, very helpful categories. And then I think
it's still a lot to
setting
unpack.
It up to apply those.
Yeah, it's still a lot. There's still a lot in it to unpack.
Yeah.
While we've, you know, so many that we've talked to, the feedback has been and the response has been, this isn't new, but this is clear articulation and very welcomed. And I mm-hmm. think you can see in just how you articulated the document's explanation of these different types of dignity, you can also see in some ways, I'm just thinking, you know, off the cuff right here, but why fiducious supplicants can make distinctions between blessings, types of blessings. Because if someone has a ontological dignity at all times, even if their moral dignity, their choices are not in mm-hmm. line with our truest dignity as God has intended us to be, then, gosh, you've got, you know, he's making a distinction there that has implications in how that person may be cared for. And so I just kind of see this as definitely being a part of Francis's broader thoughts that we've been seeing over these 11 years, something mm-hmm. to unpack a lot more. How do mm-hmm. we expect it to be unpacked? I mean, what is going to happen after this? We waited 5 years. Is there more to come, something more concrete than this? On some of these particular points.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Father Raymond D'Souza, writing for the Register today, made the point that, you know, those who are familiar with the Church's social teaching, there's not necessarily much new here, but the way it's packaged and put together and integrated is really going to probably inspire new initiatives of catechesis, evangelization, and discussion. And yeah, I mean, I think probably the issue that jumps to the forefront, you know, this document touches on basically everything under the sun in Catholic social teaching, or at least a lot of kind of different areas and issues. But the one that I think rightly deserves the most attention is gender theory, precisely because this is the first time that the Vatican, with a document of this significance, has directly and kind of in a sustained way weighed in on that controversial, thorny issue, which we know very well in the U.S. right now. Is a major challenge, a major threat. So the document, you know, I didn't mention this before, but the U.S. bishops actually wanted to address this mm-hmm. in 2018 with a kind of comprehensive document, and the Vatican said, no, we're working on it. So now 5+ years later, this document comes out. So I think we can expect the U.S. bishops, if they still want to and judge that it's the right thing to do, to offer something more comprehensive. We have some great principles in Dignitatis Infinita, but to unpack those further, and then I think most importantly, to apply them pastorally, right? There's so many questions so many of us have about things related to what kind of language should we use when someone is telling us they identify in a certain way that isn't consistent with their body. What about facilities, right? Like bathrooms? What about clothing? And I think it's really now permission for the U.S. bishops and other apostolates, right, other entities, Catholic entities, to embrace that and do that. And not only is it permission, but, you know, in a story I wrote on this, I interviewed Abigail Favalli, who's at the University of Notre Dame, and she's kind of an expert on the Christian understanding of gender. And she said that there are a couple of bombshell lines in this document where it talks about any attempt to obfuscate the ineliminable sexual difference between men and women, like, is not accepted, right? And that's very strong language. And she made the point, you know, that doesn't just apply to surgical interventions or hormonal, which the document certainly makes clear that it's talking about. But as just mentioned, it applies to the ways we use language, the way possibly that we dress, the way, you know, what bathrooms and facilities we're using. Right. So it's very, she called it a kind of like a clear doctrinal guardrail that we can use and hold on to as we engage in complex pastoral realities. And that was another emphasis of hers, is that, great, we've got doctrinal clarity from the Vatican on this issue, but that's not enough. We need to certainly protect our young people and our families from the threat of gender theory, but we also need to reach out and engage with people whose lives have been affected by gender theory, right? Young people experiencing gender dysphoria, people even who have surgically altered their bodies. And I think, so this document really kind of gives not just permission, but I think it gives encouragement to do that. And I'm personally really excited about that in the U.S., about addressing that, because it is sorely needed. Individual bishops have done different things.
Right.
Yeah. So we'll definitely be monitoring, you know, what we'll be developing on that in the near future.
Very good. Very good. Well, thank you for the clear presentation there, and I can point people to ncregister.com, where you have written this article, Vatican's Dignitatis Infinita Draws Clear Line on Gender Theory. And you can find a lot more news and analysis there at ncregister.com. Thanks for joining us on Register Radio here on EWTN. And until next week, I pray that God bless you.